This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast at Hitachi Next 2019 in a lovely sunny Las Vegas. And it is sunny today, Scott.
Yeah, right on.
It's always sunny, though, isn't it? Let's face it.
It is. I feel like Las Vegas, in some way, is maybe the third or fourth U.S. headquarters for Hitachi. We seem to be here all the time.
Well, we're here today, and I guess, well, was it this time last year? Was it November or was it in October last year?
I thought it was November, but okay. I could be wrong. I might be thinking about next year.
So let me allow you to introduce yourself, first of all. Because we've just started talking there, you haven't even had a chance to do an introduction. So, Scott Baker. Scott, you were on the podcast last year. Why don't you tell people what you do for Hitachi?
No problem, Chris. Happy to do so. And I love the fact that we just immediately jumped in. This industry is so small, regardless of what company you work for, and it's great to run into the same people. That consistency and that friendship and camaraderie really work out well. But, folks, my name is Scott Baker. At Hitachi Vantara, I have the responsibility and privilege for that, for the most part, to own all of the content and data intelligence products and how we go to market with those, the strategies that we apply to drive awareness, directions, etc., and more importantly, how those products begin to integrate with other parts of our business more seamlessly to deliver on this data ops advantage. Now, as a sidebar, I also have responsibility for data protection. So anything from traditional backup and recovery to copy data management, snapshot management, etc. But it seems like all the rage is around artificial intelligence, machine learning, workflows, ETL, you name it.
Yep, brilliant. Okay. Now this year we have no helicopters. So I'm thinking I might actually put some background helicopters on just for effect. But for anybody who hasn't listened to the podcast last year, I'll put that on the show notes. But we did have a bit of a challenge trying to record outside in San Diego with the military helicopters coming backwards and forwards. That was quite fun.
I think it gave some edge to the podcast, if you ask me.
It did. It was good. Anyway, let's get on to more technical stuff. One of the things I wanted to start with, and that's a message that we've seen many times over the course of the last 2 days, and that's this idea of data ops. Now, let me just set the scene a little bit. I met with your CMO, Jonathan Martin, and John McGee, May time. And we talked about data ops at that point. And I very much got the marketing, high-level management view of that. But I'm really interested to get a more in-depth view of what you feel data ops is and how people are actually adopting it as a process.
Wow, okay, so you put me on the spot by telling me the two people that I report into have already told you the answer, so I better get this right.
They only told me the high-level answer, so you can say anything you want.
No, that's fine. I tell you what, I'll give everyone on the podcast a one-sentence definition on what data ops to me is, and we'll step into how we make that happen.
Sure
enough?
Yeah.
So for me, data ops is really about making every bit of an organization's information available to them in the most insightful way possible so they can take some kind of informed action upon that. Because if you think about it, Chris, what we're seeing happen with data is this creation of an information supply chain across the organization, where data is being ingested in various formats from various different locations, needing to find a home where it can be managed and controlled in a centralized and governed and standardized way, and then provided to different layers where analytics are getting performed on it. And what's interesting to me about data ops is it's really sort of the natural evolution from DevOps, where instead of focusing on the development of maybe software modules or services for the business, you're taking the same kinds of concepts and applying those to how models get created and how data gets curated and delivered to data scientists to really save them the time that it normally takes, which some would argue is 80%, to prep that data.
Yeah.
Right? So when we look at data ops from the perspective of Hitachi Vantara, we also need to accept the fact that a lot of organizations have been doing this naturally for some time. We are just stretching a title over it to help them see how our products fit together.
Okay.
We're seeing data get the intelligence of looking at data being applied closer and closer to the source where it's getting created. So we've introduced products such as the LaMotta Edge Intelligence to help us really remove the noise from the data stream, right? Because not all data is created equally. Not all data has the same value. So as we can push more and more of the intelligence at the edge of the business where the data is getting created, it really saves on network traffic. It saves on data sort of slipping through strategies, finding a home and never being removed, even though it has no more value to the business.
And we talked about that last year, if you think about it. We talked about that ingest process and how the data is clean, tidy, whatever you do with it beforehand, metadata added to it and tagged and all the others. But that was more from an HCP discussion, wasn't it? When it's, in the core data center. So
right.
Now we're talking about pushing that capability out to the edge to, as you said, streamline a lot of that overhead,
right.
And reduce the network traffic.
It's not just like a sensor on the edge or something like that. I mean, even think about some of the software that organizations are relying on, where in the past they may have maybe relied on the content management system on the back end to do the workflow and the movement of the data to support the business. Those workflows are getting pushed to the front end, right, where the applications themselves are actually owning the workflows to control the movement of data. So the trick for us when we think about the centralization of data is to look at HCP now not as, this traditional iron array, but how do you create a software-only version of object storage, an S3-compliant store, how about we say that, where you don't have to sacrifice performance for scale. You get to choose where that particular version of object storage runs, and because you're not sacrificing performance to get capacity, then you don't have to move the data to do the analytics. That, to me,
okay.
Is insanely exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd agree. So the edge stuff is not necessarily just, as you said, collecting the data. It's actually doing processing on it on appliances that are sitting at the edge?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you'll see with Hitachi over, the releases we've done to date and a consistent movement toward containerization. The more containerized we can make our offerings, the easier it is for customers to decide where they run, and also the way that we size them so that we can make them lightweight enough to run, as we had talked about, on the devices themselves. Because some businesses don't necessarily care that a sensor may be saying it's, 72 degrees and sunny outside and I'm okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know, but not really relevant maybe to what we're trying to do. So putting the intelligence at the edge means the data coming in is data that's relevant based on the strategies that we talked about and probably already tagged with enough metadata to make it immediately valuable before it gets merged, blended, or added to anything else for downstream decision making.
So as an example in that scenario, are you saying, and this is a very simplistic example, could you say that, for instance, a temperature sensor has a range, and rather than just record the temperature, you're actually tagging it and saying this is in range, out of range, or, totally wrong. There's no way this could be the value that you're recording, that therefore the sensor might be broken. Is it that level of processing you're thinking that happens at the beginning?
I think it's an absolute must. Now, you don't have to truly ignore the data, as I had mentioned. You could aggregate and say that, on average, for this many hours, the sensor was in the normal range.
Right, okay.
But the nice thing about what you just touched on is the fact that the containerization of the intelligence that we're talking about here allows us to define those policies from the core, push them to the edge, because today that range might be accurate, but when winter comes, that range may change.
Change, of course.
And so to be able to standardize and promote those kinds of workflows and those kinds of boundary conditions to the edge is critical so that the models that occur at the core change as the data, the quality standards of the data begin to change automatically.
That's really an interesting area that I think I would just like to talk about, because having had some great conversations like we did last year, I did a lot of thinking about how any of this really works in the real world. So this whole idea of how we'll do processing at the edge, and I'm using air quotes because there's nobody to see that other than us two, can't see it on the recording. And one of the things that struck me with that is that you have, first of all, you have challenges around security. And part of that could be people might inject data into a system and give a false reading. So that when the data gets absorbed in, you think you were reading a certain value and you find that somebody's been giving you false data. And as an example,
wow.
By the way, there was as an example of that, the example I used was, imagine you were stealing money from a bank and you could tell all the cameras that you've not gone past a camera number plate recognition system, that you've not gone past it. Even if you have driven past it, you just tell the camera to not send your data in. So it still sends everybody else's, but just not yours. So the police don't know where you are when you're trying to escape. Okay, so the security in that scenario. There's also some sort of degree of consistency. Now, have I seen this data before? Am I importing the same data again? So you've got to somehow combine that trust piece with that validity of the data. How are all of those things sort of being handled? It sounds like, from what you're saying, some of those already are.
Well, the first thing that we should note for everyone listening to the podcast, what Chris had just indicated, is what we refer to as clear and present data danger. So we know what he's going to do after this podcast is over.
There you go.
You start tricking the sensors. But, you know, there's a notion of trust that you had mentioned. And trust for us, when it comes to the data, comes from two different vantage points. The one that we can automate would be something that would be associated with the blending of information. So certainly you could write something nefarious to try to trick a camera, but there are other elements that we would consider to be edge. It could be anything from, let's say, LiDAR detection. It could be GPS location, different kinds of sensors that could be used to blend together to alter the total information packet about what it is that you might be doing at that point in time. Right. I bring up this because depending on who you are listening to this podcast, you know, this also brings up immediate concerns about your own digital privacy.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Of course. So GDPR is a great one if you're in EMEA. I mean, we're pretty close to California. The Consumer Protection Act that they've enacted is very, it smells of GDPR.
It's going to be very similar, isn't it? Yeah.
So we work very, very closely with municipalities and government entities as we start to think about delivering solutions that automate data veracity. And that's pulling data and blending it from multiple sources to enact different quality standards and validation. The second piece of this has to do with how about ranking, right? Much like when you go to your favorite online retailer, you start looking for something that you want to buy. One of the first things I do is look how many stars it's got and what the comments are. That kind of information for us is stored as metadata, and it gives a nice feedback loop. So as people are using the data that's been given to them, they can rate it. They can show what decisions it was used to be made. And then more importantly, something that we've begun doing as well is actually including with the data the model that was used to make it, along with who created the model and some of the decision points that went into that as well. And again, this allows us to take back this view, this sort of historical intelligence view of the lineage of the data as well as the model and the person who produced it.
That's really interesting, because then you've got that scenario that could say the data source could be poor because it's missing values or it's not being recorded accurately, or, you know, it's intermittent. But if you rate that data and then somebody goes back and looks at it and says, do you know what, this is really valuable, let's go and fix those issues with it, you might then uprate that and it comes back with a higher rating, I guess. That's
right,
a really
Chris,
interesting,
you know,
idea.
The reason why we want to do this, it only takes one bad experience with the data from the quality perspective that we're talking about here for a business unit, an individual, to choose not to even go back and look at it again. And that creates this propensity for creating new data sets yourself, which stands up data silos, creates all of these downstream problems for the business. That's what we want to get away from. And the easiest way to do so is to give the audience a voice in the entire data ops system a feedback loop.
Yep. Okay. So in terms of what was announced at the show, that is in your remit, what was new and, you know, what can we dive down into in a bit more detail?
Right on. So there's a couple of things that we've done with this in alignment to this particular event from an announcement perspective. One of the first one was we made some improvements to our Hitachi Content Intelligence product. Sits alongside Pentaho, really good for data discovery, natural language processing, et cetera. We can talk about some of the artificial intelligence and machine learning algorithms that have been added to it. Okay. The other thing that we did was we announced our HCP software-only and containerized version that has been designed to support the Lumada data services, creating an S3-compliant, highly performant object storage layer that you can actually use to build the Lumada data lake on top of.
Okay. HCP, just touching on that one, that seems to be really successful as a product.
You know, it has been in the market since 2003, more than 5,000 clusters deployed globally, 3,000 or more customers out there actually using it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you look at the number of other object store type vendors and what they've been offering and how many customers they have, I think maybe they've got more under management with smaller customers. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But I don't think anybody's got the same number of customers and the same number of deployments as you've got.
You know, what I would say is, you know, looking at competition, I think our, you know, the individuals that are out there are making decisions for the appropriate kind of technology to support their use cases based on the knowledge that they're given, right? And the nice thing about object storage, although it's nice for everyone, not so nice for the people that make it, is that you try to maintain consistency with the S3 API set to give the data the mobility that it needs.
Yep.
So what you find is that all object storage vendors out there generally offer 80% of the same kinds of core capabilities in their product. It's when we start looking for ways to differentiate our offering for our customers and address new use cases is where we get to shine, ergo the mentioning of the content intelligence product.
Yeah, and that's sort of where I guess I wanted to go with that in terms of the discussion, because ultimately, if everybody's offering just the ability to store stuff, it's a race to the bottom in terms of price. And then it becomes a value thing where you've got to really add features on it. So let's go into the content intelligence piece and understand a bit more about what that's doing and what you've added.
Right on. So at the release of version 1.5 of Content Intelligence, and for those of you who are not aware, within Hitachi's object storage offering, we look at it as a portfolio. It includes a file sync and share solution, some would argue is similar to OneDrive or Dropbox. It also offers a cloud file gateway to get data into HCP and present it in a way that traditional applications can still access with SIFS and NFS.
Yep.
But with Content Intelligence, our
goal here... You're not allowed to say SIFS. Oh, Stephen
not
Foskett.
Allowed to say it.
Stephen
You're
Foskett
right.
will be killing you. SIFS isn't, it's SMB. We have to say SMB.
You're
NFS.
Right, and yeah. But I thought Ooh. I was okay to say legacy or traditional.
You can
That's okay, all right.
We'll pretend you never said it.
SMB, FS, we'll just mix it all together.
Yeah.
No. But what we really wanted to do is step back and think, what's missing in object storage?
Right.
And the thing that's missing is, how do we analyze and take full advantage of the unstructured data that customers are giving us? So with version 1.5 and things that we're actually demonstrating here on the showcase floor is, how do we connect even more data sources that are very, you know, non-traditional? So structured data sets.
Okay.
With the idea of being able to retire legacy applications, pull the data set in, turn that database structure into an XML file, and then on the back end, stored as an object, on the back end, we just install a service layer that converts SQL statements to XPath queries.
Okay.
And now you can still access that data because you want to read it, but you can now retire that legacy application.
And is that
stack.
Something you have today?
It is something that we can do today, yes, sir.
Wow, okay, that's really interesting.
Now, the other thing, too, is that I did focus a little bit more on the natural language processing. Right? This is critical to helping organizations discover their data landscape. Right? And anything that you talk about in terms of regulatory obligation, you know, GDPR being one of them, or simply just being a more effective organization ready to embark on a data ops journey, it's understanding your data landscape. And one of the services that we offer is an assessment where we can look at your data landscape. We can classify all of this data, show you where you're spending your resources in terms of physical, where the data is, what's inside of it, who owns it, who's accessing it, and who's responsible for it. Again, one of the other services that we've provided to customers, and once we give them that data landscape, it would not be nice if we didn't offer this, but we can press one button to migrate that data to anywhere you want it to go. We want it to be in HCP, but we don't want to hold your data hostage. So if you were to say, I want to migrate this to AWS, an S3 bucket, or another file system or something like that, we will certainly do so.
Right.
But my favorite part, Chris, in this product is the institution of AI and machine learning algorithms to allow the system to start helping customers deal with non-text-based information. So we can do OCR, we can do text processing, things like that. We can look for sentiment, but what we can do now with the artificial intelligence components is we help customers build a visual dictionary. So as you're processing digitized records that have a lot of imagery in them, our language, or that you define for us, then becomes these visual identifiers in the image that we will tag, put appropriate metadata on. So if you're an engineering firm, imagine digitizing all of your blueprints, training the model to look for what a transistor symbol looks like, tagging that symbol with who made the transistor, what lot number it came out of, what bin it was involved in. So 10 years down the road from now, when there's a recall, it's a simple search, and you know exactly what needs to be modified.
And you know which particular parts of your inventory have got that transistor on, and you can find them really easily.
We can do so much with that. We've also augmented the capability of natural language processing to do sentiment analysis. So you and I both cast a digital shadow that we have no control over.
Yeah.
The comments made about you on Twitter, me on Facebook,
Let's hope they're good.
Let's hope they're good, but imagine being able to use content intelligence to connect to that, pull that information in, and determine the sentiment that's being expressed about you. Being able to understand the digital shadow that you're casting gives you an opportunity to affect change. Mm. You know, if there's more negative sentiment about something that you might have said in one particular month, what was going on that you might not have had any control over that someone just happened to take offense to? Or, you know, how do I look for opportunities? I really love Chris's podcast. I just wish he talked about consumer devices. Right? So that's an innovative opportunity for you to grow your base. And
true.
So we really want to start helping customers understand their digital shadow from both a customer loyalty perspective, risk mitigation, but also where's the innovative opportunities as well. So all of this kind of activity that we're doing is to help customers begin to make the transition of thinking about object storage as being only good for archive as to now being the right fit for, you know, intelligent data consumption, blending, and then providing immediate answers.
I was really interested in what you said about the ingestion of SQL databases as XML, because one of the things that I've looked at from various different vendors is they talk about this idea of mining your data, and a huge amount of it comes from traditional monolithic applications that might be like SQL Server or Oracle or whatever. And I look at it and think, if they're backing that up and putting it on a backup environment and then telling me they can somehow mine that data, I'm not quite sure that that's a simple process. And obviously, imagine you back it up every day. Which version are we treating as being the live version? So the idea that I can take a database, convert it into something that I can put into an object store, and it now just gets searched in the same process as all of my other data in that object store, now becomes a much more interesting way of doing something with that data.
Yeah, you know, so in the case of what we just talked about, the use case for us there is really about retiring that, but still providing the access,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about what you had just mentioned. One of the other products that we have, Hitachi Data Instance Director, it allows us to do that backup and recovery operation that you're talking about. And one of the things that I love about our approach is that we do not change the format of the data. Some of the competitive products out there have a tendency to roll it into a proprietary format with a catalog. We keep it in its natural state.
Mm-hmm.
We also offer the ability to immediately back that data straight up to an HCP and then trigger Content Intelligence to index it so that you would be able to do a context-level restore. Go find me all files containing Chris Evans and just restore those. Now, let's tie this back to GDPR. The backup set.
Yes.
The backup sets that organizations own when someone exercises their right to be forgotten, are not outside of the scope of the data they're responsible for indexing. If you have a huge traditional backup set that uses its own proprietary format, it would mean that you would have to recall all of that data, unpack it, do the search. It's a very costly.
Absolutely.
And even if you don't, even if you sort of say like, well, maybe we don't need to do that, the moment that you're not looking and a recall occurs, that data becomes live.
Yeah.
And so what we wanted to do is give customers the option. So whether you're using a Commvault or a Veritas, you can configure your backup policy to write to HCP. It'll give you a nice backup to cloud story. But if you do choose to use Hitachi Data Instance Director, just know that your backup sets can go directly to HCP and can trigger Content Intelligence to index.
Okay.
Tag as well. So someone could tag a backup set as being, containing personally identifiable information, right? And that would help you to, again, further alleviate downstream processes. Because what I will tell you is while today's event is focused on data, my team's sort of sub-emphasis, if you will, is something more critical, which is your time or our customer's time.
Okay, makes sense.
How do we make that more efficient?
Yeah. So that was great, Scott. In terms of looking at any of this stuff, clearly, if you're at the show today, you'll be able to see it. That's pretty easy, but obviously not everybody listening to this will be, because it'll get published in a few days' time. Whereabouts online can people go to? Do you want to just provide a list and we'll put them in the show notes, or have you got any URLs we can point people to directly?
So certainly, you know, if you were to go to the Hitachi Ventero webpage and meander around and
look, it's not that easy to navigate.
Right.
No offense.
I don't want to leave you doing that. That would sort of be a violation of the data ops advantage, right?
Yeah.
So what I'd love to do, Chris, if you're game, is I'd love to provide you some very direct links that customers will have access to where they could see the demos or learn more about the things we've talked about.
Great. We'll do that, and we'll put that in the show notes. But for now, Scott, thanks for joining me again.
You got it, my friend.
Good to catch up with you, and look forward to doing it again in the future.
Absolutely. Have a great one.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter @StorageUnpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.